Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from Pub Quiz, December 2025, Radio Times, by Tim Glanfield. Question number one, in which year did Elvis Presley die? Was that A, 1977, B, 1985, C, 1999, or D, none of the above, since he's still alive today? So which year did Elvis die anyway? And question number two, complete the first line of the Bill Withers hit, Ain't No Sunshine, A, In a Storm, or B, When She's Gone, or C, After My Song, or D, Before the Dawn. So complete the lyric, Ain't No Sunshine, Which one is it, anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of April 10th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1953, that singer Eddie Fisher was discharged from the Army and arrived home to a check of $330,000 for record royalties for the 7 million records that were sold while he was enlisted. Eddie Fisher's discharge bonus today in 1953. And it was 60 years ago today, in 1966, that Jan Barry of the rock group Jan and Dean crashed his car near Dead Man's Curve in Beverly Hills, California. He suffered severe head injuries and was in a coma for nearly 2 months. The teenage tragedy song, Dead Man's Curve, was the tune that Jan and Dean recorded just 2 years earlier. Jan Barry suffered such intense injuries that when paramedics first arrived on the scene, they initially thought the musician hadn't survived. However, the medics eventually found a weak pulse and rushed Jan Barry to the nearest hospital in Beverly Hills. The surf icon's severe brain trauma put him in a coma for 6 weeks. When he awoke, he had lost his ability to speak, move his right arm, and walk. The musician began what would become years of extensive physical therapy to regain partial mobility on his right side. Jan Barry returned to the studio a year later and continued playing music into the 1990s. Jan and Dean, however, never regained the momentum they were riding before Jan's car wreck. Finally, in transitions, this one with a country music connection, we have this titled article, Country Singer Ray Stevens Breaks His Neck in Fall. This is published in music-news.com, April 7, 2026, download. Ray Stevens is recovering from a broken neck. According to a press release, the two-time Grammy-winning singer suffered a fall on 29 March and was briefly hospitalized in the Nashville area and is now recovering at home. The country star, who is 87, has been advised by doctors to wear a neck brace for approximately 4 weeks. Despite the injury, he remains fully mobile and in good spirits as he continues his recovery, the statement reads. Stevens' injury comes in the wake of a minor heart attack and surgery in July last year, which was reported by People magazine at the time. The Streak singer recovered after undergoing minimally invasive heart surgery, the outlet reported. He went to Nashville Hospital after he complained of a chest pain, where he underwent a heart catheterization procedure, during which he discovered that the chest pain was in fact a heart attack. While Stevens' surgery was successful, he canceled his upcoming performances at the time. Stevens has a forthcoming album now, Favorites Old and New, on the cards. The 13-track collection is a curated mix of beloved standards alongside new selections from a range of talented songwriters, and that will be released on schedule on the 10th of April. An AI overview adds this short bio. Harold Ray Ragsdale, known professionally as Ray Stevens, is an American country singer, songwriter, and comedian. He's best known for his Grammy-winning recordings, Everything is Beautiful and Misty, as well as novelty hits, including The Streak. The Intermezzo from Bizet's Carmen introduces our classical music news. Cheers! 10 brilliantly boisterous drinking songs. Classical music isn't all serious symphonies and grand operas. It also knows how to party. This is published in BBC Music Magazine on the 22nd of September 2025. For centuries, composers have celebrated the joys of drinking with raucous, rollicking tunes that capture the spirit of a good toast. From operatic arias to orchestral dances, classical drinking songs bring laughter, camaraderie, and the occasional tipsy stumble to the concert hall. Whether it's the lively Brindisi toasts from La Traviata or Beethoven's high-spirited songs, these pieces prove that classical composers knew how to raise a glass in style. So pour yourself a drink and let's dive into the most famous drinking songs in classical music. And coming in at number one, Purcell, I Gave Her Cakes and I Gave Her Ale. Looked out of the house by his wife after a drunken night at the theater, Henry Purcell caught a chill and died at the age of 36, or so the myth goes. Purcell liked a good triple. Against that, many drinking songs are excellent titles, such as I Gave Her Cakes and I Gave Her Ale, and Wine in the Morning Makes Us Frolic and Gay. Number two, Verdi's Brindisi, Toasts. Let's drink, and may the brief moment be inebriated with voluptuousness. sings the young romantic Alfredo in this most famous of drinking songs from Verdi's famous opera, La Traviata. He wins Violetta and the entire chorus over, and they quickly join in this rapturous song. Well, wouldn't you? Number 3, Beethoven's Song of the Flea. Beethoven wasn't exactly known for writing drinking songs, but he did enjoy a good toast. While most of his choral works are serious and profound, he had a playful side when it came to music and alcohol. One of his most notable boozy works is A Song of the Flea, a humorous drinking song adapted from Goethe's Faust, where Mephistopheles sings about a flea causing chaos in a king's court. Number 4, Berlioz. Certain rat, Dans une cuisine. This is a sad tale of a rat who, after living the high life in the kitchen, is killed by a dose of poison. The aria from Berlioz's choral orchestral work, La Domination de Faust, makes it onto our list because it is sung by an already inebriated student as a prelude to more drinking. In the opera, it is followed by a tale of a flea who brings his relative to infest a whole royal court. Flea 1, Rat 0. Number 5, Brahms Academic Festival Overture. In 1879, the University of Breslau awarded Brahms an honorary doctorate. After sending a letter of thanks, he was informed that the university expected a grander statement than a mere note. Brahms orchestrated a very boisterous potpourri of student drinking songs, the premiere of which he conducted gleefully in 1881. Though university officials were less than impressed, we can safely assume that the students appreciated the effort. Number 6 is Offenbach's Ah, quel dîner. Perhaps the best thing about this song is the wonderful performance by Dame Joan Sutherland, which comes with hiccups included. In true Offenbach style, Sutherland is about to get married to her equally drunk and totally unaware lover. Number 8, Mozart, As Long as the Wine. Traditionally performed with a glass of bubbly in one hand, this drinking song has earned the rather classy alternative name of the Champagne Aria. In it, Mozart's operatic hero, Giovanni, orders his servant to make ready for a party. There must be a great feast with enough wine for everyone to get drunk on and dancing that will last all night long. Number 9, Moscagni, Viva il Vino. Hail to the bubbling wine, amen. It seems at this point in Moscagni's opera, Cavalleria Rusticana, that all will be well. Sadly, that isn't quite the case. But it doesn't diminish the sheer joy of this party scene. Number 10, Romberg Drinking Song. This song by the Hungarian-born American composer Sigmund Romberg certainly wins first prize for realism. It comes from Romberg's 1924 operetta, The Student Prince. The operetta follows Prince Karl Franz, who falls in love with a tavern keeper's daughter while studying in Heidelberg, Germany. Torn between duty and love, he ultimately chooses responsibility over romance, leading to a bittersweet ending and an imposter. And number 11, Bizet's Toreador Song from Carmen, which was the intermezzo to which opened this article. This is often called a drinking song, Toreador song, despite only one tiny reference to booze. Still, a more rousing ode you will not find. The perfect tune for an indulgent evening. Well done, Georges Bizet. Next round is on you. Thank you. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, How Many Keys Does a Standard Piano Have? It's 88, and here's why. This is published on the 16th of March, 2023, in ClassicFM.com by Maddie Shaw Roberts. A standard piano has 88 keys, 52 white and 36 black. But who decided this number would be the norm, and why? The king of instruments has played a significant role in music history, from concertos and sonatas to nocturnes and trios. Classical music would simply not be the same without this humble piano. Here's a look at the history of the instrument and how it came to have the full 88-key keyboard it boasts today. Before the piano was invented, composers wrote a lot of music for the harpsichord, which has just 60 keys. This meant that everything they wrote was limited to the harpsichord's 5-octave range. But then around the year 1700, Bartolomeo Cristofori, a musical instrument technician from Padua, Italy, decided it was time to update the harpsichord, and he came up with a new keyboard instrument with a hammer mechanism. After word got out about Cristofori's miraculous musical invention, composers started writing more and more music for the piano. But the instrument's 4-octave range was limiting, so piano manufacturers designed new pianos with more keys, so that composers like Haydn and Mozart could write more challenging material for a fuller keyboard. By the time romantic composers like Chopin and Liszt were writing music in the mid-1800s, pianos had up to 7 octaves, allowing them to compose pieces with an even more ambitious range. Today's composers usually write piano music that fits within the range of an 88-key model. Most piano makers also accept this as the limit, because anything outside is considered too high or low for the human ear. The London Symphony Orchestra's brassy cover of Overture from Tommy introduces our local music news with a classical music touch. It's titled Sights and Sounds, Chamber Music Raleigh's annual spring outdoor concert at Carey's Ritter Park. This is published in chambermusicraleigh.org, season 84. Upcoming concert on Sunday, April 12, 2026 at 2 p.m. Presented by Joe Kahn in memory of Elizabeth Kahn. American Brass Quintet. It features Kevin Cobb on trumpet, Brandon Ridenour on trumpet, Eric Reed on horn, Hilary Sims on trombone, and John D. Rojak on bass trombone. So visit www.chambermusicraleigh.org/access for additional details, including accessibility, information, and phone 919-821-2030 for tickets. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, in which year did Elvis Presley die? Was it A, 1977, B, 1985, C, 1999, or D, none of the above, since he's still alive today? Correct answer? Answer A, 1977, August to be more precise. As noted in this AI overview, since Elvis Presley's death on August 16, 1977, numerous conspiracy theories have falsely claimed he faked his death to escape fame, witness protection, or due to mafia ties. Elvis citing suspicious inconsistency in autopsy reports and alleged misspellings on his gravestone have fueled these rumors for decades, often driven by fan grief and denial. Here are some of the common rumors and conspiracy theories. Fake death to escape fame? Many fans found it impossible to accept the sudden death of the king of rock and roll at age 42, leading to widespread denial and witness protection. Some believed Elvis was connected to the mafia and had to go into hiding, a theory often fueled by speculative media reports. Misspelled gravestone? Rumors persisted that the misspelling of his middle name, Aaron, spelled A-A-R-O-N instead of Aaron, A-R-O-N, on his grave, was a hint that it was not actually him buried there. Coffin photos. Theorists claim photos of his body in the coffin appeared to show someone else, or that the coffin was too light, fueling speculation of a false corpse. The Orion persona. Singer Jimmy Ellis, who sounded similar to Elvis and wore a mask, was used by a producer to market the idea that Elvis was still performing, strengthening Elvis is alive rumors. Why the rumors persisted? Private autopsy. Because the autopsy report was never publicly released, it created a vacuum that was filled by speculation. Medical examiner findings. While the official cause was cardiac arrhythmia, the pathologist noted many prescription drugs in his system, causing confusion over whether it was a heart attack or drug-related. Pre-internet misinformation. In the pre-internet era, newspapers like the National Enquirer and TV reports often published unverified sightings that gained traction. Note, Elvis Presley passed away due to cardiac arrhythmia at his home in Memphis. And the answer to our second question? Complete the first line of the Bill Withers hit, Ain't No Sunshine. Is it A, In the Storm, B, When She's Gone, C, After My Song, or D, Before the Dawn? Correct answer? Answer B, Ain't No Sunshine When She's Gone. As noted by Tom Eames in SmoothRadio.com on April 3rd, 2020, it's one of the most simple but incredibly moving ballads of all time. Bill Withers' Ain't No Sunshine may only be just over 2 minutes in length, but it stood the test of time since its release in 1971. Here are some facts about the classic soul song. Bill Withers wrote this song for his 1971 album, Just As I Am. It was Bill's debut album. He was inspired to write the song after watching the 1962 movie Days of Wine and Roses. That film depicts the downward spiral of two everyday Americans, played by Jack Lemmon and Lee Remick, who succumb to alcoholism as they attempt to deal with their problems. They were both alcoholics who were alternately weak and strong. It's like going back for seconds on rat poison, Withers says. For the song's third verse, Withers intended to write more lyrics instead of repeating the phrase, I know, I know, I know, I know, 26 times. However, he was then advised by other famous musicians to leave it that way. Withers says, Graham Nash was sitting right in front of me. Stephen Stills was playing, and there was Booker T and the MGs. They were all these people with all this experience, and I was this factory worker. Their general feeling was, leave it like that. Withers was 31 years old at the time and was working at a factory making toilet seats for airplanes when he wrote the song. When the single reached gold status, his record company presented him with a golden toilet, marking the start of his new career. The song was originally released as the B-side to another song called Harlem. However, DJs played Ain't No Sunshine as a single instead, and it became a huge hit and Bill's first. Although it reached number 3 in the U.S., it somehow never made it in the U.K. charts in 1971. However, over time, it became an iconic song and Withers' signature song. It wasn't until the song was performed on The X Factor in 2009 that the song had an appearance in the UK chart, and that was only at number 40. In 1972, a young Michael Jackson released a cover version, and it was a bigger hit in the UK than the original, reaching number 8. Many others covered this song, including Joe Cocker, Tom Jones, Paul McCartney, Prince, Sting, and Kenny Rogers. Stevie Wonder included Bill Withers, and he inducted Bill Withers into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2015. At that ceremony, Wonder performed the song with Withers sitting next to him on stage in appreciation. In one of the film Notting Hill, most memorable moments, the song is used to show Hugh Grant's character moving on with his life after breaking up with Julia Roberts and showing the passage of time across the four seasons of the year. So let's close out today's program with that sunshine hit. Here's Bill Withers. Ain't No Sunshine When She's Gone. From his 1971 album, Just As I Am.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review underwritten by Bill McClure. Tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule an appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.
Anytime she goes away.